I'm Gab. He's Jules. Blue skies over West London, albeit bitterly cold.
It's cold.
But tell you what, gray skies. In fact, dark, nasty skies over Turin, over Juventus. Yeah. We're going to be getting into that. We'll be talking Real Madrid. Of course, getting the win. Nice goal by...
Kareem the Dream.
There you go. That way you won't have to say that again in quick hits.
I will. Trust me, I still will.
But there's one place to start, because it's Arsenal against Manchester United. And this is, George, this is another one of those games. So you look at the sketch, you say, all right, Arsenal have this lead.
Yeah.
Where can they drop points?
Yeah.
And I thought against an in-form United side that had won 9 in a row before, you know, drawing that game against Palace, I think it was.
Yeah.
But even then, they played well in that game. And I thought, this is a hurdle. And they overcame this hurdle as well, winning 3-2. That goal at the end coming in injury time. But I thought on the balance of play, Arsenal deserved all 3 points.
Yeah, I thought so too, Gab. The stats and the numbers, I think back that up. They touched the ball 63 times in the United box. 63, which is more than any other team.
Is it 25 shots on goal?
20 shots on goal, 3.2 XG.
Okay.
Yeah, 3.2, which is the highest again all season. But nobody has ever touched the ball in the Premier League this season 63 times in the opposition's box. Not even City.
That's because City probably didn't want to, but go ahead.
But you know, and United, on the other hand, only 12 times they touched the ball in Arsenal's box. And you don't have to touch the ball a lot in your opposition's box to score goals, but it helps and it shows the dominations and the dominance of your team. And I think they were fantastic. I thought United fought hard and were hard to play against, but without Casemiro, it's not the same United team. This is a team that relies purely, or certainly on Sunday, relied only on Marcus Rashford and his own talent. Antony is useless in a game like this. Useless. He only plays backwards and sideways. Weghorst, not really sure what he does. And
what he does, he's a pressing machine.
Okay.
On a team that doesn't press very much or very well.
And then when Bruno only has Rashford as an outcome when he has the ball, then he's very limited. So I just thought United were there for the taking. And yeah, Ten Hag can say, oh, but we conceded 3 goals, we made 3 mistakes. Every goal comes from a mistake from the opposition, always. You know, it's very rare that it doesn't come from a mistake from the opposition. The 2 goals that United scored came from mistakes from Arsenal.
Whoa. Okay, so obviously the Rashford one, they lose the ball, but it's still Rashford shooting from...
I know, but the mistake is the party is a terrible pass.
That's fine.
That's the mistake
in normal
here.
Circumstances, you don't expect somebody to score from there.
No,
that's all I'm saying.
But it comes from a mistake. No. Like the 3 goals that Arsenal scored had mistakes in them from United.
I think a more relevant one is it's going to be a low XG shot like Rashford's one was, which, you know, the ball could have gone anywhere. Obviously, he's in fine form. So, I mean, he's in ridiculous form.
99 after the World Cup.
I want to ask you just on United for a minute. Obviously, Casemiro missing is a huge blow because, when I was watching on television here, they said, oh, but, you know, Casemiro gives you that. He doesn't just defend, but he gives you that composure and whatever. And he's an excellent passer of the ball. Now, obviously, the dude's Brazilian. He's a good passer of the ball. If you tell people in Madrid, he's an excellent passer of the ball.
Yeah.
They say, all right, go and meet Mr. Modric and Mr. Kroos. I did feel, though, that when you put McTominay in there, you are really sacrificing that side of it. And you're making yourself more vulnerable to the Arsenal press. Because McTominay, I'm not having a go at him, but he's not going to play through the press the way Casemiro
Eriksen was the only one who could have done that.
And Eriksen, I thought, also had an off day.
Yeah,
you know, he's not going to have a great game every time. Now, the thing about Arsenal, I want to touch upon this too, because they've been active in the transfer window as well. They're kind of doubling down on this. 2 signings in the last week for a team that's top of the table with a big lead. Kivior from Spezia and Leandro Trossard. Trossard, what did you make of the fee on that?
I mean, I know 6 months left on his contract. You pay, I think, up to 25 million with the bonuses for a 28-year-old player.
It's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
The amortization gods don't like that.
No, that's true. I think you were in a position where you had to strengthen. Time was running out. He's a good player, as we saw. He's not at the level of Modric, but he's still a good player, Premier League proven. So I guess you just allow that one. It's not. I don't think it's the kind of deal that they like making, but you had to make that one.
Kivior, on the other hand, you're very high on.
Yeah, I mean, we saw him at the World Cup with Poland. We saw him with Spezia, who, for me, one of the best centre-backs who can play defensive midfielder, can play left-back as well. Left-footed, which I think is what Arsenal wanted as a cover or competition for Gabriel. Great diagonals with his left foot. His distribution is really good. So I think he's smart signing for 22-year-old.
I think he's also a very athletic defender, which you don't expect necessarily from a guy who's also quite comfortable on the ball.
That's true.
He kind of has the whole package. The one thing, maybe the question mark about him is, even when Spezia signed him, did he uncover a gem? Did nobody realize that, you know, he was going to be quite like this? Did he develop? We'll see. But I think they definitely could have used some cover at the back, and they got it. Let's start with the transfer angle. I mean, again, for me, wearing my financial probity hat, this is a lot of money for Trossard. But again,
I hear you.
If it wins you the title, I think it makes a difference. Because, you know, we talk about cover and alternatives. Arsenal, with the exception of Gabriel Jesus, have been extremely fortunate with injuries this season. I mean, Partey's missed a bit of time. I think apart from that, I'm right in saying nobody's been out for an extended period.
Yeah,
no, right?
Zinchenko a little bit, but
Does this send a... If I'm Smith Rowe, how do I kind of feel about this, though? Because
I wonder if Arteta sees Smith Rowe more as a...
As an Odegaard?
Yeah. Or Chaka on the other side. I think he's probably even better on the half space, on the left half space than the right one where Odegaard is. More maybe than the winger. But the good thing is you can put him as a winger. You can put him instead of Saka, for example, if Saka has enough there, or you replace Saka by him from the start for some games. You can have Trossard on the other side. I think now what you need is a bench, really. I mean, no offense to Trossard, who's a really good player, but you need more depth in your squad, whether they're starters or on the bench.
Yeah, which is what Trossard provides.
Trossard. So I know you paid the 25 million for that, and maybe it is a bit too much for someone who turned 28 this year, maybe. But I think you take it and keep your similar defensively. And then you've got Smith Rowe coming back from a long injury. He's almost like a new signing as well if he gets...
You sound like Arsene Wenger when you say almost like a new signing. But now that I understand what you're saying. Kivior, like I said, totally makes sense.
Yeah.
I do wonder, have they given up on having an attacking right back? Do they feel that with Zinchenko or Tierney, when Tierney plays, they're not going to be having... And they're just going to continue with White and Tomiyasu.
No, I think they like Fresneda from Real Valladolid, who's young, who's very good, one of the best right backs in La Liga this season. I think there's a few clubs, both in Spain and in England. Looking at him, it's one of those. The thing is, you've just spent 50 million on White, who can be a centre back and this kind of Saliba competition backup. So you'll have Gabriel, Kivior, Saliba, White. And then another 20 million, a bit less, on Tomiyasu. If you go and spend another 20 million on Fresneda, then I don't know how that could work. That it could work though. But I think midfield is the one where now they're looking at potentially. I mean, they were talked about Camavinga. I can tell you that there's no link with Camavinga at all, and Camavinga is not going to leave Real Madrid. But I think it's maybe where they're thinking.
And it's more in the defensive midfield piece, right? So you're looking ahead, an alternative. You know, you've got Sambi Lokonga there. There's Elneny. Yeah. But
for Chaka, replacement, for example, maybe. Right. Someone like that, left-footed.
I want to ask, though, about... I was thinking back to the Mudryk signing, right? Well, obviously, they missed out on that. And presumably, if they'd signed Mudryk, they would not have signed Trossard.
Yeah.
But if you bring in Mudryk... If I'm Martinelli or Saka, I mean, Saka's had a tremendous season, scored a ridiculous goal as well last night. If I'm Martinelli and you're like, you guys are trying to sign Mudryk, what does that mean for me?
I mean,
Trossard's a different profile, right? Because Trossard tells me, okay, so you have a veteran guy who can play, he can play up front in a pinch, he can play wide, whatever. But if you bring in Mudryk and I'm Martinelli and I'm like, dude, we're like roughly the same age, right?
Yeah.
I'm a starter. I'm a starter on a team that's with me since I came back from my injury. We've gone from strength to strength. We're top of the table. Now you go and break the bank on Mudryk. What does it mean? Or were they looking at that also to get a bit of leverage maybe or a plan B over Saka? Because as you reminded me during the break, Saka has not yet extended his contract.
No, he hasn't yet. And they're still hoping that he will commit his future to the club. And right now, you see how happy he is on the pitch. You see the result. You don't really see why he wouldn't. But it's, you know, he will make his, he will decide and make his choice. It's a good debate to have on Martinelli. But then, how did Foden feel when City signed Grealish for 100 million? But this is what happens in big clubs, I think. This is why you need competition. You need strength and numbers and bodies and squad depth.
I agree with you, right?
You take it and you say, okay, well, we're going to fight for a place.
It's about resource allocation.
Yeah.
But it's just at that point, though, if I'm Martinelli, I'm thinking, wait a minute. Gabriel Jesus is injured. We have this guy, Eddie Nketiah, who, you know, before those two goals yesterday, yeah, he works hard and stuff, makes the same kind of runs. He's not a goal scorer. Mm-hmm. If we want to win, why aren't they spending this money on a center forward?
Yeah, right? No, yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah. It's a fair point.
You know, I thought, I'm not saying this to be critical.
No.
They've been proven right. Everything's gone right for them this season. So I'm just going to hold my hands up on that one. Moving to United, like I said, I thought this game was a lot more one-sided than the score suggests.
And yeah, I agree.
We gave you numbers and stuff. Does it mean that the progress under Ten Hag was somehow less real? Or is it just that they paid a price for Casemiro not being there?
Yeah, I think
so. And for individual mistakes. And I think Eriksen having a rare off day.
Well, yeah, I think the progress has been very good. But Casemiro was a key part in that progress. Massive, massive part. And when he's not there, you see against the best team in the league. You know, so you didn't play badly against a team that was 15th in the table, for example. And we said, oh, okay, maybe we saw them better than what they actually are. This was away from home. But this is not where I struggled a bit yesterday. Okay, Weghorst, talking about transfers, is supposed to be a short-term fix. So someone who needs to improve your team because it's such a short-term deal, you know, you're not going to say, oh, Weghorst, we can give him 6 months to adapt and then...
Right.
So what's the point? Like, what? He's not bringing anything in that game. Not really so much in the Palace game either. I'm like... Okay.
Well, I think the issue, though, there is there's no Martial. So
you had to play him.
If you don't play him, you play Rashford through the middle, where I think he's less productive.
Yeah, for sure. But so I think there's a few reasons why United didn't have a really good good game. We can't take away the progress that they've made under Ten Hag. It's just that Arsenal showed their weaknesses and showed that when Casemiro is not there, you rely pretty much all the time on Rashford's talent, which is amazing. I mean, he scored one goal. If there's not that amazing save from Ramsdale in the second half, there's another goal that he scores on his own. Literally, you give him the ball and then he scores on his own. It's incredible form.
Two guys who get scapegoated a lot one guy gets scapegoated a ton for United. And okay, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, we know he's not very good on the ball. He's known more for his defending. And I'm going to blame him for the Nketiah header. Quite obviously, he completely loses him. And this is supposed to be what he does. He's supposed to be this great man marker, or he's supposed to be better at that part than the other part of the game. I also wonder, went a little over the top, though. I was watching Match of the Day on television, right? They say, well, look, he gives away the ball for, I guess it was
the third goal, right?
And so they show him, he gets pressed, you know, good pressing action. He loses the ball.
Yeah.
And then they have to like fast forward the play,
yeah,
like 3 minutes.
Seconds after.
Wait, it felt like a lot. I'm like, all right, dude, like you tell the guy to play out from the back.
Yeah, it's not a direct
mistake. You know what
mistake.
I mean? Like, why don't we just burn him at the stake? Like he's a witch or something. I mean, I don't. I thought he did okay in those games. Playing
there's a
in
great
the right.
tackle on. What? There's a great tackle on.
He did, yeah.
Martinelli or Xhaka, I think, in the second half. Like, amazing tackle.
He's not suited necessarily for the type of football that Ten Hag's playing right now.
No, that's for
but,
sure.
But, you know, in the end.
But you see, I've got more issues on Eriksen, for example. Eriksen is a very good player. He's a very experienced player. Even if he doesn't like defending per se, like as a proper defender,
right.
The way Xhaka does him on the goal, on the second goal, the Arsenal second goal, when you're Eriksen and your brain is, you've got such a high IQ, like football brain. And you know Saka is not purely left-footed because he can, but you know that just don't let him do anything on his left foot and then on the right, you can deal with it easily. And yet you let him come inside like that and shoot twice. in the space of 10 minutes. I'm like, come on, Eriksen.
I put that up to brain fart and a bad game. That really, I know exactly the incident you mean, and I don't think that was any good. A word on Lisandro Martinez as well. I was just struck by that goal that he scored, which, by the way, we're talking about errors and stuff. I mean, that was goalkeeping error, right?
Yeah.
I mean, where he gets so low to hit it, and it takes like a weird trajectory. I don't know how many players would choose to go and head that ball as opposed to somehow, you know, try to finish, try to place it, or maybe just smash it, hoping for a... I don't have to be critical of it.
Technically, it's not easy to do, for sure.
But it's not easy to do. No. It's scary to do, too, because you're going so low. If somebody's boot comes to clear it, that's your head that goes off, right?
Yeah.
I just love that about him.
But now, maybe
what I don't like is other things about him, but, you know.
Maybe it's hard. So Odegaard is literally next to him. And I think if maybe he takes a touch, or maybe if he waits for the ball to come down a little bit more to hit it with his foot or something, then maybe Odegaard can come. I think it's very hard for Odegaard to defend because he goes with his head. Harder to defend if he maybe was taking a touch or waiting for the ball to come a little bit lower to volley or something.
Right, but if Odegaard decides to try to hook the ball away, he decapitates
it. Yeah, he kills
it. I'll tell you what, Lisandro's got Scott Stone.
What did you feel at when that goal goes in, very much against the run of play?
100%.
At 2-2, did you think, okay, now they're going to be under pressure, United? Or did you think, okay, they might salvage a point somehow in a game that they've been under pressure a lot, despite taking the lead? Or did you think it was inevitable at some point that Arsenal were going to put so much pressure and pressure and pressure that United might crack? Which is what Shaw said. Shaw said, the second half, they controlled the whole second half. And in the way, we deserve to concede that third goal.
Yeah, Ten Hag said something different. Like, they're under pressure because they've been together for a long time, and this is a well-drilled team, which United are not right now, because they're not going to have the chemistry, because so many of these players are new, because some of these players aren't that good, because they have injuries, they have people missing. They're just not in a position where they can compete in footballing terms. They can compete in guts and moments of magic and whatever.
For each other, which they do, to be fair.
Which is how they did it. I mean, they can compete in footballing terms against lesser teams, but I think not against this Arsenal side. So, and look, I mean, you can say, oh, it was a close-run game, blah, 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 but it really wasn't the two goals come in those circumstances.
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Gooners. Let's talk about Juventus and Atalanta. Difficult times, not just the 3-3 home draw, which I think left them a little bit recriminating. That was last time. We're going to get into that later. But I want to talk about the big news that hit them on Friday, like a pile of bricks, which was, if you remember, over some of these... what we call in Italian plusvalenze, artificial plusvalenze. So in other words, swaps that are made to kind of inflate transfer values for accounting purposes. The case was reopened because there's a parallel criminal investigation in Turin, which uncovered new evidence. The prosecutor wanted a 9-point penalty, and said they got a 15-point penalty, drops them from third place way down into mid-table. Jules, this is big.
Yeah, it's massive. I mean, they can still appeal. I think they've got 30 days, isn't it?
They have 30 days from the time they get the written reasons. They should be getting the written reasons, I think, by the end of this week, possibly early next week.
And then go to the Olympic Committee.
It goes to the Olympic Committee.
And then they can either drop it completely or keep it. They can't reduce it.
Right. They can't go into the merit. They can just look into the technical aspects. And this is important, incidentally, because, again, this is a complicated story. I have a Q&A up on the site. But the bulk of the punishment from Juve comes from violating Article 4 of the Italian FA's code, which they have to abide by, which basically calls for high moral standard and ethical behavior. Mm. So it's not that they say this kind of player trading is illegal, because it isn't, although, you know, it can be dubious sometimes. It's that the prosecution contend you violated this article about integrity because you turned it into something systematic and you knew it was wrong. I mean, and there are wiretaps and there are handwritten notes that seem to suggest this, where, you know, where they say things like, oh, wow, that was really, really crappy, except they use the S word, what we did, or let's hope nobody finds out, or, kind of thing. And it's stuff that would have never come to light had it not been for the criminal investigation, because obviously the football investigators don't have the power to go and subpoena people, to go and raid offices and to go and tap phones.
You know, the issue I have, and we come back to Juventus, but quickly, is that there are other clubs and other people involved in it, who were involved in the investigation, who got nothing. Literally, they were just like cleared, including big clubs. And it felt like suddenly when I saw it, and you know more than me and more than us, it felt like basically Juve were
scapegoated.
Yeah, and paid for everybody else, which I don't know if it's true or not, and maybe the others are going to be caught at some point.
So I think there's a number of Juve fans who feel that their club has been singled out. Again, we don't know the written reasons. They will come out later. What I think emerges, though, from the hearing itself, and there were people who were present who related what went on, is that, first of all, the prosecutor wanted to punish. Remember, there were 9 clubs who were involved in this proceeding. They wanted to punish all 9. The other 8 were all not punished. And that is, and this is a bit of the issue here, that is that with the other 8 clubs, you don't have material evidence that this was part of a systematic approach to engage in this kind of false accounting. Mm. And the reason you don't have it is that their offices weren't raided as part of a criminal investigation. The criminal investigation is to do with something else, to do with the fact that Juventus are listed on the stock exchange. And of course, that whole business with the deferred payments for the pay cuts they took during COVID and whatever else. Now, the evidence that they gathered does involve other clubs, or clubs who have not yet been named. I'm being a little careful. I'm not going to say who those clubs are. You might have seen them out there because there are legal implications to this. But their names have been published in papers anyway. Those other clubs could yet be charged. So, because you're right. I mean, when you do this, both of you are intentionally inflating something for some reason. That's certainly the accusation. And I want to point something else out for people who don't seem to understand this. When you do operations like this, you get a short-term benefit, because you've made an accounting profit or you're closer to breaking even.
I think Pjanic was 43 million, which is the second highest in club history.
Something mad like that, right? But it's not like you're like printing fake money. It's not like Casa de Papel where you're printing fake money in the basement. Right? That money, you then take a hit of it in subsequent years. So effectively, you are spreading the cost of an application. The Pjanic Arthur deal, which is obviously the one of the most obvious examples, they still have to account for Arthur. It's just that they're doing it over more years. So you're effectively pushing an issue, a liability, down the road in subsequent years. Where it becomes problematic and illegal, especially in Juve's case, is you have a duty to the tax authorities to be as fair as you can, but in this case, to their shareholders as well. Because, you know, these are supposedly assets, and if you've inflated their value, you're misstating your accounts.
A question that I had when I saw on Friday that the breaking news was, why now? Why did they, for example, for the 15 points deducted, why doesn't it apply next season? Why right through halfway the season, this is for now?
So I think that's a good question. So a couple things to say here. I mean, first of all, I think it would be worse for Juventus if it applied for next season, because you can imagine in terms of attracting players in the transfer market, future revenue, and whatever. Here, you just take the hit right straight away. I think it is customary in these situations. And by the way, the penalty applies straight away, but they're going to get those 15 points back if they can get it overturned at the hearing with the IOC. Or they have a level, there's another level that they can appeal to. Obviously, that's a court of arbitration of sport, which would be kind of the appeal of last resort to try to get it overturned. And I think all this will go pretty quickly and obviously needs to happen probably before June, right? But it is customary that the points deductions happen straight away, because the idea is these are for crimes or misdeeds that happened before. So it's happened before that, you know, the last time it happened, I think, was Parma, 2014-15. They weren't paying players and were missing payments. And they ended up being fined a total of 7 points, but it was like 2 points 1 week, another point the next week, and so on. And it was in season.
Yeah.
So I don't think that part is that unusual. Another point people have made up is, why are they, this isn't illegal, why are Juve being, the whole basis of this, it's an accounting thing, nobody's ever been punished before. Well, that's not true. Chievo in 2021, Chievo, of course, famously for doing pretty much the same thing, right? Inflating transfer values to make their books look better so that they could enroll themselves in the league. And another question people may have is, if you're not doing this to generate money, to generate real money, you're not benefiting. What's the harm? What's the crime here? Well, the harm with doing this is if you're misstating these accounts, you have to have a certain amount of equity in your club or a certain amount of value in your clubs to be able to register for the upcoming season.
Yeah.
You have to meet certain financial requirements. Otherwise, your ownership has to go and inject equity in the club to make up for it. So this is a very obvious way to do it.
Yeah.
And it's an obvious way to meet financial fair play requirements as well, which is why, as you know, UEFA have opened an investigation.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because it's been a crazy last few years, really, for Juve. Since the title and the Sarri, which was the last title, after that, the decision that they made, all the money that they lost through the pandemic and, you know, etc. And now this, on top of the bad results, or average results, let's put it that way, there's the financial fair play UEFA investigation, there's those payments that they deferred to the players during, which is also under investigation. So there could be even more trouble.
So the UEFA basically have said, all right, well, if you've been, it's almost like automatic, right? You're under investigation, there's a criminal inquiry against you for misstating accounts. We rely on your accounts to allow you to play.
Yeah.
So you have the requirement to play in the Champions League. If you falsified those accounts, you shouldn't have played and you shouldn't have had that money. So we need to penalize you. That's essentially UEFA's standpoint. They're going to go and they're going to verify this. And I think there's definite risk
you
there.
Think?
Well, if the sentence stands that they misstated their accounts and those are the accounts that they submitted to UEFA, at the very least, there's a fine. Possibly an exclusion, as I see it, if all this stuff stands. And I think the criminal investigation will probably have more weight there, because in the end, with a criminal investigation, it's pretty open and shut.
Yeah.
What would really scare me is the business that they did with, and we've talked about this before, with the deferred payments to the players, where they told the stock exchange and they told their shareholders, oh, look, the players took a pay cut of 4 months, I think it was. When in reality, it was really 1 month, and they were likely going to make that money back through bonuses the following season.
Yeah.
One of the guys who, by the way, didn't sign this agreement, Cristiano Ronaldo, which is why they're trying to subpoena him to see if he's willing to answer. I think he's in Saudi Arabia. I don't think he's staying. And by the way, to make this very clear, Cristiano Ronaldo has done nothing wrong in this one. In fact, if anything, he stuck to the rules.
Yeah, actually.
But obviously, they owe him money as well. So that's the difficult one, because you have an obligation towards your shareholders, and you can say, oh, but the main shareholder is Exor, which is controlled by which is this international holding company. They also own parts of commercial real estate. They own a big chunk of The Economist as well. And obviously they have shares in Fiat. It's true, they're the Agnelli family, but there's also 37% of the shareholders of Juventus who are not part of Exor.
Yeah.
And these are people who invested in it. These are pension funds. And, you know, I have my money with Vanguard. So technically, I could be a Juve investor too, right? If you misstate the accounts, that's a really, really serious, serious condition, which is why the whole board changed. And that could get land them into serious trouble, I think, with UEFA.
And in terms of football, so this game was coming. So they had the thrashing against Napoli the weekend before. Then they won in the Coppa d'Italia against Monza in midweek. But that, then Friday, those, that punishment. And then that big game against Atalanta on Sunday last night, where I thought they reacted because they, you know, they went 1-0 down. They came back. Then they went behind again. They came back. Yeah. I think Allegri was happy with the reaction of the players, in considering the difficult circumstances.
Yeah, no, I think on the pitch there were a lot of positives. People were like, "Oh, how's this going to affect the players?" I don't think the players are, you know, they're talking about it, but the players want to go out and they want to control what they can control, which is on the pitch.
Yeah,
I thought you saw a great reaction. Di Maria, who have been critical of the past, played really well.
Yeah.
Fagioli, I don't think there's any question that Fagioli and Miretti are Juve's future this stage. They both did really well. Your boy, Arek Milik, scored a fantastic finish. In the end, they had to settle for a point. I thought maybe they might have deserved a little bit more. Interesting reaction, though, from the Juve sphere, you know, the Juve fans. So on social media, you get a ton of, we're being scapegoated, blah, blah, blah. You know, they're super negative about it. But, and I think they've been quieter, there's also a big chunk of Juve fans who frankly say, why is it always us? What is the issue here?
Yeah.
How could we have lied to our own shareholders? How could we have misstated these accounts? Why did this go on for so long? And then on top of that, there's also the Juve Ultras. And to be fair to them, Juve Ultras have had a very difficult relationship with the club because the club have tried to kind of remove them. Some of them are represent a criminal element.
Yeah.
Others say, oh, no, we're bad for business because we just make noise. And they came out, the two of the main ultras groups, the Drugi and the Viking, they came out with a really, really harsh statement where essentially they said, this is worse than Calciopoli in 2006 because 2006, we were picked on, we were actually innocent. A lot of Juve fans believe that.
Mm.
This time, this freaking wiretap saying that we're doing something illegal and we know we're doing it.
Yeah.
And they really blame Andrea Agnelli and the board for allowing this to happen on his watch. So there is a pretty nasty backlash from them as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think a lot of people realize that you can't build a castle on sand. And this also explains the Super League.
Yeah,
And by the way, if UEFA win the Super League case, it opens a door for them sanctioning Juventus, Barcelona, Real Madrid further for their part. Because that's essentially
more trouble.
More financial woe. And there's a lot of people now. Some of these are saying like they just want to say like, why can't we be normal?
Yeah,
why can't we be like a normal club?
Yeah,
why can't we? You know, and I don't know. I think opinion is definitely divided there. What we do know is a new board are going to fight these charges. And so they should.
Yeah.
I think they do. They're going to fight these charges based on the fact that they were found innocent the first time around. And they're going to try to undo this whole thing.
Yeah, that was the second trial.
They reopened it based on the new evidence. They're going to say, well, you know, systematic. What does this mean? And they're going to try to do it on the fact that, you know, we need to. They might hang on to some technical points as well, which is sort of the time frame in which the appeal was lodged and the new trial came up. Although, again, in terms of PR, if you do get off on a technicality, it doesn't do you much good.
No, definitely not. We should say that Agnelli got, I think, banned for 24 months.
Yes, Agnelli got a two-year ban.
Yeah, Cherubini and Paratici, which we mentioned a bit later on the show.
Yeah, Fabio Paratici getting, who's now at Spurs, obviously got a 2.5-year thing, a ban. Interestingly enough, their chief football officer now, especially with Cherubini banned, is Francesco Calvo, who he was one of Agnelli's closest friends. He was at the club for a number of years. I think he was chief revenue officer at the club. And then he left. He worked at Barcelona. He worked at Roma. He came back, I think, a year ago. And then he, and now obviously he's in charge of the football operation. Interesting stories about Francesco Cosmo and his relationship with Andrea Agnelli, but I'll leave you guys to do some Googling on that one. All right, enough Juve. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Real Madrid get 3 points away to Athletic Bilbao thanks to two superb goals, one early, one late.
Yep.
But not much else in terms of performance. Jules, remind me who broke the ice for Real Madrid.
Kareem the Dream. What a goal as well. Left foot volley on the turn, if you want. Superb, really superb finish.
I like Toni Kroos's goal better. I thought that was more difficult. That's kind of the pass it into the net.
Yeah,
he's all
sure
off balance.
That. I'm not sure about that. But I think what was interesting is Carlo warned his superstar by saying, hey, nobody is untouchable here. Or maybe Kareem, but... And he dropped. Modric was on the bench. Again, Cruz was on the bench as well. And he started with the Ceballos, Valverde, and Camavinga in the holding role, midfield three, if you want, which to a certain extent worked, although they were under pressure.
They were battered.
They had to do a lot of defending. And
big Courtois saves.
Yeah, Athletic Club, I think, could feel a little bit, maybe, like, you know, they could have had better, could have done better in that game. But for Real Madrid, it was going back to winning again in the league, especially after the Copa del Rey win against Villarreal in that crazy scenario. So well done to them, but there's still a lot of work to be done here. Liverpool and Chelsea battle out to a drab, scoreless draw. Gab, was it just fear of losing? And how about Mudrik's debut? That was pretty special.
Yeah, so I'm glad we got to see Mudrik's debut because that livened up the game.
To be fair. I didn't think he would come on. I didn't think he was maybe much fit enough.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with him. He came on.
It's November, man.
Incredible. He was Neymar-esque right down to the neck tattoo. He was exciting. Other than that, I mean, obviously Chelsea have a billion injuries. Liverpool have a billion injuries. I think it was a classic game. Like, I'm not saying they played for the draw, but you could see there was just a lot of fear. Cody Gakpo, very tentative. Salah, unrecognizable right now. Yeah. That's just on the Liverpool end. This is a classic game where losing hurts you a lot more than winning benefits you. And so, you know, you end up with this result, which in the end, I guess, you know, means we don't talk about Liverpool and Chelsea in crisis.
Yeah, almost the Havertz goal that was disallowed for the tiny offside early on.
It would have changed the game.
Yeah, had that stood, I think maybe it would have opened up. But after that, it was just like...
Sticking with Chelsea, Jules, they have reportedly made a £55 million bid for Moises Caicedo, which Brighton has turned down.
Yeah.
Although, our boy Roberto De Zerbi says... Caicedo may not be around after the window closes.
Yeah, I think he maybe knows that they're going to come back with an improved offer. Chelsea need desperately a midfielder. We said that's maybe where they need to strengthen the most, really. And Badiashil now, Modric have arrived. Fofana as well, of course. And so, you know, go and get a midfielder that would maybe change something. They tried Enzo, as we know. Didn't work out. I think Caicedo would be great for them. But again, on his own, I'm not really sure how much he would change completely the dynamic of that team.
Does he have enough of a resume to justify this kind of spending? I mean, I know that...
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. Obviously, Conte and Jorginho are in expiring contracts and whatever else, and you're going to have to bring him... I just don't know that he's been here long enough to say, you know... I mean, Yves Bissouma looked fantastic for a while, too,
yeah,
right?
True.
I
mean, Cucurella as well.
Cucurella is another one. But obviously, the difference here, Graham Potter worked with him...
Yeah, losing well.
You know, in the summer and start of the season. So, but still.
Yeah, there's a week to go. I mean, just over a week to go. Napoli win at Salernitana in the derby 2-0 and up to 50 points, Gab, in one half this season at the halfway point of the season. They're on pace for 100 points.
That's right. 2 times 50 equals 100. I mean, it's wild. That would be the second highest points total ever. Juventus under Antonio Conte.
Yeah.
Obviously, it wasn't going to be under Allegri. We got 102 points back. I think it was 2013-14. No fuss, no muss. There was a derby. Salernitana under pressure. They were G'd up because Davide Nicola was sacked. And said, oh, no, I changed my mind. No, okay, stick around. You got to go from Giovanni Di Lorenzo. And?
He's first of the season in the league.
He's first of the season. He's scoring Mannings and right back.
Yeah.
And who scored the other one? Victor Osimhen. Because the best is yet to come. It's a hat trick for Erling Haaland as City destroy Wolves 3-0, Jules. Is this the best way for City to react after being booed at halftime by their own fans against Spurs?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I thought they started slowly, although Haaland has that chance, you know, after like 15 minutes or 18 minutes. And then he starts scoring from the Bruyne cross, and then he scores over the two halves, over the break, in 14 minutes, the hat-trick, his fourth hat-trick of the season. Only one player in Premier League history has more than four in one season is Shearer in 95-96, who had five. But, I mean, he scored four hat-tricks in the league in 19 games. I think Van Nistelrooy had the record. He scored four in 65 matches or something crazy. Suarez was 81 matches. The numbers are crazy.
Wait,
for you to have an idea before you go, he scored now 25 goals in 19 games.
Yeah.
Those 25 goals have come from 75 shots or 74 shots even. Right? Aguero scored his first 25 goals for City in 150 shots. This is just, Haaland scored more goals with his left foot in the league this season than the whole Wolves squad have scored in the Premier League.
I'll give you another one. It's January. He's got 25 goals. In the last 4 years, a golden boot, each was won with less than 25 goals.
23 and 22. I mean,
it's absolutely
He's going to catch Salah's record of 32, and then he can go higher. Yeah.
That said, though, by the way, two of those three goals, but people say, oh, City don't create enough for him, whatever. Two of those three goals, Jules, maybe not now, but I like to think that, like, you know, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I like to think you would have scored them, because one was a penalty, and the other one was the one after the mistake where, you know, because of the pressure they put, he's there to finish it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you would have been in position to finish it. I'm going to guess you probably would not have scored the header, because he's about 10 inches taller than you. But, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And the chance that he had before, because he scored three from four shots. Incredible. It was a good save by Jose Saba. Yeah, another incredible afternoon for Erling Haaland. Newcastle draw 0-0 with Crystal Palace away, and they stay third. Gab, they haven't conceded a league goal since November 6th.
Tremendous. They've only conceded 11 goals all season in the Premier League, 10 of them from open play.
And three against City, by the way.
So three against City, yeah, I know, which, you know, City has its own category. I thought, like, oh, look, they're overperforming, you know, XG conceded. They are. It's about nine fewer than they would have otherwise. But guess what? Even their XG conceded is still the third best in the league, marginally behind Arsenal and City. So it's just like the tremendous defensive job. Botman, Pope, Shar, Byrne, all these guys. 3 points for Barcelona, who beat Getafe thanks to a Pedri goal to stay top of the table. But Jules, Xavi himself said this was not a good performance. Yeah. And was it just Marc-Andre Ter Stegen bailing them out?
I mean, there's one especially a magnificent save from him. Where I struggle with that Barca team, Gab, is that they're capable of doing so well against Real Madrid in the Clásico, and then being really against Getafe at home, where, like, you think, like, why can't you have a bit of consistency in your performance, you know?
At least they don't concede at home.
Yeah. Tottenham play in a few hours against Fulham on Monday night, Gab, but what does the Juve case mean for Fabio Paratici and possibly for Antonio Conte?
Well, for Fabio Paratici, it remains to be seen if the ban is upheld on appeal and if it's extended worldwide. And even if he's banned and it's not extended, do Spurs want to keep him? For Conte, negotiations go on. His contract expires at the end of the season. Now, I've said this before. It's not like Conte's there because his buddy Paratici is there. Yeah, they work together, but Conte also left before. He's his own guy. He'll make up his own mind. Wild stuff at the Westfalenstadion. Signal Iduna Park.
You know what?
I'm old school. I still call it the Westfalen because I was there for the 2006 Germany-Italy semifinal. And I was very happy with the result that day.
Yeah, I was at the France-Portugal other semifinal.
It was wild. I mean, they win 4-3. Gio Reyna delivers a stunner.
What a great goal.
I mean, what more we say about Gio Reyna?
Like, the celebration, you know, like, don't talk. And
he puts his fingers in his ears.
And
what did he mean to say? Come on, you can psychoanalyze him.
Well, yeah, it's just like, you know, Greg Berhalter, maybe, USMNT, all that kind of stuff.
Maybe
his mom, maybe Danielle, I don't know. But, like, he came on, scored the winner in an incredible, really incredible game that, of course, if you're, I think, Dortmund, you would have liked to control a little bit more. But
you know what, Joe? Seasons change, years change, popes come and go. But what doesn't change is Borussia Dortmund, the absolute chaos.
Yeah.
Three times you take the lead at home against against this ridiculous team. Augsburg have three. Augsburg, I think, had 3 points in the previous 8 games, and 3 times they're pegged back. They're twice with craven defensive errors.
Yeah, Schlotterbeck scores, and like gives away a goal. You think like how can a professional player in a team like that defend that way? The great news as well is that Sebastian Haller came on to a standing ovation, of course, after you know the his testicular cancer. And the team was 2-2 at the time, so he had a very positive influence in the win. So well done to him, well done to Dortmund, and well done to Joe Reyna as well. And meanwhile, Gab, staying with Dortmund, Youssoufa Moukoko has put pen to paper over a new deal until 2026.
Yeah, and even though I don't think it's been officially announced, I'm assuming that unless Moukoko's agent is kind of a fool, he either got a huge pay bump or he got a release clause in this because it's not a long term. You would imagine so. I think all these things should be public personally. But, hey. But yeah, no, it's good news. And you know what? Moukoko and Haller, you look at the, where they are in the table, you can say, oh, look, they're in sixth place. Yeah, but they're 2 points out of second place.
Yeah.
I still think they have a lot to play for, the Champions League as well. You just need to stop it giving up the stupid goals.
I know, man. I know.
Milan Skriniar has said yes to Paris Saint-Germain, Jules.
I'll take him.
But will he come in January or will it be in the summer? And how big a loss is this for Inter?
I think it's a big loss for Inter. They've tried hard to give him a new deal, to convince him to sign a new deal. They've had many offers on the table that he rejected. I think there was a point where they were quite optimistic that he would stay and extend. And in the end, it seemed that he's rejected the last offer and I said, like, this is it now, and told PSG he was going to go there, I think, in the summer on a free, which probably means the end of the Sergio Ramos time in Paris, you would think. Maybe if you were Kimpembe, you could worry a little bit. But I think he's a really good centre-back. I think he would bring a lot to PSG in terms of mentality, physicality. Can play in the back three or in the back four. I think on the free, and I mean, you know, there would be a signing on fee and et cetera and big wages probably, but I think it would be a really good signing for PSG.
I don't think this is as disastrous for Inter as people make it out to be.
I mean, the fact that they wanted hard to keep him shows that they... You know,
well, they did, but they wanted to keep him at their number.
Yeah,
I mean, I think I am heartened by the fact that Inter actually maybe learned a little bit of something from Milan here and showed a little bit of discipline.
Yeah.
You know, we at your age, we can pay you this much. You want more than that? Au revoir.
Yeah, it's simple as.
It's not like he's 20 years old. He's a future of the club.
No, true.
He's
a future. Bastoni. Exactly. No, I hear you. It's the Griezmann show as Atletico Madrid beat down Valladolid 3-0. Happy times here again for El Cholo Gab?
Of course. Three great things happened in this game, which would have brought a smile to El Cholo. Number one, Morata scores after fluffing a couple of chances. But still, Morata scores. And it's good when Morata scores because then people stop complaining about how the guy never scores. Number two, Memphis Depay comes on, makes his debut, gave the ball away a few times, and that's fine. You know, you can deal with that. I mean, if there's one thing Atletico don't have a problem with, is winning the ball back. And number three, great goal from Griezmann. Tremendous assist. Come on, the little flick.
Amazing. Amazing.
Why not?
One of Griezmann's best performances since he's come back from Barcelona.
Everton lose away to West Ham 2-0 in a clash of embattled managers. As we record this, there are some outlets who report that Frank Lampard Jr. has been fired. He's been sacked.
We don't
have confirmation of this yet.
No.
We don't know as we're taping this now. So I'm just going to ask you.
Yeah.
If you were Farhad Moshiri, or if you were Alisher Usmanov, who has nothing to do with the club,
and Farhad Moshiri simply asking for advice, or if
you were Bill Kenwright.
Yes, he's still there.
I was still there, incredibly, after 18 years. Would you?
I would have a long time ago. I would have sacked him a long time ago. Nothing against Frank Lampard Jr. I like him very much. We work together at BT Sport. I just don't think he's good enough. I don't think he was ever good enough for what the club needs. I'm not saying he's a bad manager. I'm just saying for what Everton needs right now, I just don't think he's the right guy. I don't think he's got the right mentality. And I don't think... I think you can keep him now. It's not going to change anything. So may as well change him. Bring someone who can... I don't know, maybe...
An avoid relegation specialist? Would you go for an avoid, short-term avoid relegation specialist?
Sean Dyche every day right now.
Sam Allardyce?
No.
Or Sean...
No, Sean Dyche is there, available. Go and get Sean Dyche.
You serious?
And yeah. I mean, I think you need something like that. You need, it doesn't matter. You need something completely different than what you had before. You're not going to go and get a someone with a like a De Zerbi, for example, right now. I don't think that would work.
Okay, but what if Sean Dyche comes to you and says, okay, I'm not going to try to copy his voice, but what if he comes in and he says, all right, I want a 2.5-year deal to show that, you know, you're serious about me? Because if you're talking Sean Dyche, just 6 months, sure, maybe long.
Yeah, I would not give more than 18 months,
whatever,
for sure.
Right? But the thing is, that, look, I'm not having a go at what he did at Burnley with very limited resources. That's fine. But that football only gets you to a certain level with Burnley. You're not going to go and get into Europe playing that kind of football, even if you have very good players.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
They did once, but still.
What kind of Europa League nonsense?
Yeah, yeah, but still. They traveled and they got knocked out very quickly in the qualifiers.
Yeah, I don't think if you went to Everton fans and said, hey, do you want to have the kind of success Burnley had when they were in Europe? They would say no.
They only want to stay up right now. Can he keep them up?
So that's...
Could he keep them up?
I think it's more likely than not, even if Lampard stays, that Everton are staying up. I truly believe that.
You think Lampard could keep them up?
There's so many teams down there. It's so tight. But what I'm saying is, if you're going to bring in Sean Dyche, fine. But I think you need to have a hard line and say, Sean, you get the team for 6 months, and then we have a conversation in the summer. Do you want this job or not? Do you want this job or
and
not?
And he would accept it.
If he accepts it on those terms,
he will.
Fine.
He will.
Because, like I said, I don't think that kind of football can...
No,
can,
but
you
that's
can
fine.
Grow doing that.
Right now, I think Everton fans would take any style of football. And that would be better than what they've seen this season so far. Because it's been dreadful.
If you commit to 2.5 years of this, what's going to happen?
No, of course.
You can't do that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We agree.
No, I know. I just think they're in a... incredibly tricky situation anyway. Roma beat Spezia 2-0 as Tammy Abraham's fine run of form continues. But Gab, the talk is all about Nicolò Zaniolo. Is he going to leave, really?
Well, he has to be left out of this game. He's been linked to Tottenham.
Yeah, where he could have gone in the summer.
Although, who knows who they're negotiating with there.
Yeah.
It's been reported in Rome, although not confirmed here, that Spurs says, okay, fine, we'll take him on loan, but no obligation to buy or any of this other stuff.
Yeah.
To which Roma's point is, well, if we're going to let Zaniolo go, we want to sell him now, so that, or at least have an obligation to buy, so that we can book that revenue, which is obviously important for them because he did spend a lot of money last summer.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Under Jose Mourinho, especially in wages. Mourinho afterward was coy. If you remember, his relationship with Zaniolo's had kind of ups and downs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now he's playing good cop with Zaniolo. Also because Tammy Abraham and Paulo Dybala are playing really well. Dybala was fantastic again. So Zaniolo becomes, you know, less important in the short term. In the long term, I think Zaniolo is a genuine talent who may or may not ever make it. But if he's fit, given what he can do, you know, you're going to kick yourself forever if you let...
Because the opinion is a bit mixed, right, over him. Some like us really like it, like a prodigy kind of player that you don't see very often.
Yeah.
And other things that too many injuries, maybe not the right attitudes, that kind of stuff.
If these are your reasons for not liking Zaniolo, I have no problem with that. What I have a problem with is people who go and question his technical ability or his athleticism or whatever else, because those are not in question.
Yeah.
You know, to paraphrase Daniel Moynihan, you're entitled to your own opinions, you're not entitled to your own facts. There's no question that Fid Zaniolo is a supremely, supremely gifted footballer, possibly the most talented footballer at Roma, other than Paulo Dybala. There's no question about
clearly,
that, right? And Mourinho said so, said as much himself. The question is he worth the other stuff that comes with it? The injuries, possibly attitude, where does he fit into the team? You know, those are valid questions.
Yeah.
Jules, how about an irrelevant statistic for old time's sake?
Yes, please.
My old buddy at the Times, Bill Edgar, who loves doing this stuff.
He loves numbers.
He reports that Liverpool versus Chelsea on Saturday was the 50,000th top flight game played in England, dating back to
1886,
89. I think it was. Was it Preston who won the first league title?
Yeah, something like that.
50,000. I just have no frame of reference for this. Does this sound like a lot?
So 50,000 in what, 130-odd years, something like that?
Yeah.
A bit less, a bit more.
You know what puts this in context, right? We watch football for a living, right?
Yeah.
How many football matches do you think you've been to in England? Premier League, top flight matches.
So you see some of the guys who follow the national team, the French national team with me, count how many games from the national team they've seen, like Vincent Duluc, for example, the great writer from L'Équipe, knows exactly he's on 300 and whatever, or 400 and something. And I started, and then there's loads that I can't remember being there. Then I remember being there, like, I don't know. Do you know?
I do not know. I'm going to hazard a guess that, assuming you go to one or two games a week and you've been doing this stuff for, but you might be right around the 400 mark, maybe 500. 550,000.
We are a lot.
But specks in this universe of English football.
Oh my God. I'm really glad for this quickie. One of the best quickies we've ever had on this show. Barcelona president Joan Laporta said in the Apple TV documentary on the Super League that Gianni Infantino was open to the idea of the Super League in exchange of the club supporting his new kind of club World Cup former things. Are you surprised, Gab?
Well, it's really not surprised that Joan Laporta said this. Yeah. This is something I've heard before. I'm not surprised. I mean, I know obviously UEFA, FIFA then issued that statement saying absolutely not, blah, blah, blah. But I also think Gianni Infantino is a realist. And, you know, if this is his attitude, if this is what the clubs wanted to do, you know, he would justify to himself saying, all right, how can I make this work for football? Rather than simply saying no. It's also possible that, you know, when Laporta rings him up and says, hey, Johnny, we're doing this, you know, or Bartomeu more likely originally, Johnny would have said, okay, yeah, sure, I'll be open-minded about it. He hangs up the phone and says, you know, what's this guy smoking, right? It's also, I mean, I generally don't know. Well, we do know, obviously, he's had direct contacts with the clubs when he had the World Leagues for him, and that's something UEFA didn't like. They thought it was a massive overreach. I think understandably. And we also know that he's not against Super Leagues a priori. I mean, he's setting one up in Africa, right? Yeah. Obviously, different landscape, different situation, different reality. I don't think the African Super League, by the way, is a bad idea or bad for football or so bad for African football.
It's
a different continent. It's a different situation.
Yeah.
You know, in Europe, of course, I think, you know my views on it and the way it all came to be. Paris Saint-Germain play in a few hours in the French Cup. Jules, two opposing players from Pays de Cassel, all right. Our big PSG fans. One of them is a member of an ultras group. This is the magic of the French Cup.
It is very much, Gab. They're over the moon that they play PSG. So when the draw was made, they're playing the sixth division, Pays de Cassel. It's in the north of France, so not far from Calais, for example. And in 2018, they basically merged, I think, six different clubs from 12 villages or whatever it was to create this Pays de Cassel. And they still had to play a game that was postponed to then the winner would face PSG. So they were over the moon. Well done to them. They're going to play in the Lens Stadium. They're going to have 35,000 fans there. It's going to be an incredible occasion, really. And you're right. I mean, I think more than two of the players are big PSG fans.
I want the guy who's a PSG ultra, like at the end, if PSG wins, you go and celebrate with the traveling Paris Saint-Germain ultra.
But I think he works in college. He's like, you know, the guy who looks after the children kind of thing, you know, in a college. And people have asked him for photos that some of the students to sign autograph, which he's refusing to do. But it's an incredible story, really. To see Neymar and Mbappe. Messi is not in the squad, traveling squads, but it's going to be great. The goalkeeper from Pays de Cassel already played when he was at Wascal, played against PSG and Ibra, and he said, for me to play twice in my career against PSG is like winning the lottery. So good luck to them. Let's hope they do well. But yeah, this is the magic of the cup, per se. Cristiano Ronaldo finally made his official debut for Al Nassr against Al Ettifaq. Gab, how did he look and how did he go?
Okay, so confession, I didn't watch this game, but guess what? I didn't need to, because there is somebody who, and this is a Cristiano Ronaldo effect, who made like a super cut. It's on it's on YouTube. It's like 3 minutes of 45 seconds of basically every time Cristiano is on screen. No, you see him in the tunnel. You see him adjusting his boots. You see his shots, his dribbles. He had one move in this game. It's worth you watching this.
That's
because
true.
I know you just went to the you were
I
just
saw
at the NBA
yeah,
game.
I saw the highlights.
You saw the ankle breaker that he does.
Yeah,
he stops in the box. he does a little shimmy, and the defender falls over onto his backside. I don't know if it was Tisserand.
Yeah, I think it might have been Tisserand.
Well, Tisserand's a serious player. Yeah, he played for Monaco. Player. This is not some Schlemiel. Good player. As they say in the old country. He had a shot on target in the 90 minutes. It is what it is. Yeah. I don't think we'll be providing regular Cristiano updates unless he scores or does something special. But tremendous reception, 25,000 on the ground, sold out, made noise beginning to end. And like I said, this little Cristiano supercut, if you are a Cristiano loyalist, may well make your day. It's on YouTube. Exactly. Find it. All right, Jules, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Thursday.
Thursday, of course.
I think we owe our... Sure, are many fans out there, at least a full week of Gab and Jules, rather than Gab or Jules.
Yes.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.